T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Clint Stoerner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham. We are indeed at the Bear Bryant Awards, being joined now by one of the 10 finalists, Ken Niumatalolo from the Naval Academy. Thanks for joining us, Coach. These names, you're one of the 10. What does it mean to be here tonight, one of the finalists for the Bear Bryant Award?
Humbling, you know, just as you look at the other guys that are here and see all that they've accomplished, you know, I mean, just very, very humbling and just grateful to be here.
Doing it at the Naval Academy, a service academy, what's it like to coach those guys? It's a little different than the rest of college football.
You know, every school has great young men, and I'm biased. You know, I feel like I got the best guys in the country. But I just think of these guys. I mean, if you don't serve your country and don't go to the military, it doesn't make you a bad person. I wouldn't went to the military academy or any of the service academies. But I have great respect for them. And you know, I got great respect that you would go and serve our country and, you know, protect our freedoms. I just have great respect for people that do that. Like I said, if you don't serve in the military, doesn't make you a bad person. But these young people that go, young men and young women, tremendous amount of respect for them.
Coach, talk a little bit about, it's a different battle. That's probably not a good term when we're talking to you, but it's a little different battle coaching in the environment that you coach in, from the schedule to all the different responsibilities for you and your players. Talk a little bit about that, what's different and how you attack it.
I think that's probably the biggest thing, just your other requirements in the day. You have your military requirements that you have to do. You're going to school. You're going to class. If we play Notre Dame on a Saturday and you got a paper due on Thursday, you're turning your paper in. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. And so I think just being able to get guys to manage their times, getting our coaches to make sure that our time is allocated right, because we don't have them all the time. You know, I've been at other places where players hang around the football building all day. You know, they'll come there in between classes. They'll hang out there and watch film on their own. We only see these guys during meetings and practice, and after that, they're out, you know, doing their other requirements.
Ken Niumatalolo is joining us at the Bear Bryant Awards. Coach, I'm a University of Houston guy. I see your triple option way too much, way more than I would like to see it. What makes that offense so difficult to defend?
Well, I think now it's been beneficial to us because not everybody runs it.
Yeah.
And so it's not that defensive coordinators don't know how to, you know, play it, don't see it. I mean, don't know how to have a scheme for it. Just your players don't see it. And I think that's very beneficial for us because, you know, 11 weeks you're playing against the spread, and then one week you're playing against us. So it's just different there. So I think just because of the players not seeing it week in and week out, it definitely helps us. But it's a sound offense. It's based off numbers. You know what I mean? So that's never going to change. We're always going to run to less people. You're always going to run to angles and better blocking sides. And so because it's a sound system, it's not a gimmick, it's been very, very effective for us. And, you know, we love using it.
So growing in high school, I ran up and was part of an offense that was the veer, triple option, midline option, all of that type of stuff. And so a huge key to being a success in that type of offense was being disciplined. So talk to me a little bit about the discipline of having guys that are in the Naval Academy, being in the Service Academy. How does that help you translate to running that type of offense in college football?
Great question. Because, you know, Coach Belichick always says that, and we steal that from him. A lot of coaches use that. Do your job. But that's easier said than done because everybody wants the ball, and why do I have to take this gap? The ball's over there. You know, stay in your gap on defense or on offense. You know, why did I have to do that? And having disciplined guys that buy into doing their job, it gives us an opportunity to maybe beat some guys that are more talented than we are, faster, bigger, and stronger. But when you got 11 guys on the field pulling the same way and you're like this, it just gives you an opportunity to compete. And I say this all the time, but football is the ultimate team sport. But everybody's job description is different, the center from the guard to the cornerback to the snapper. And if guys are doing their own deal, it's hard to compete. You know, in basketball, you can have one guy that's a superstar and four guys that stand in the corner and he can, you know, will you to win. But in football, everybody's got to do their job. And having disciplined guys like we have at the academy, sometimes helps us maybe beat a team that's more gifted than we are.
Coach just described the Rockets' offense. One guy doing it all, four guys in the quarter.
You took away. That's exactly. I wasn't going to say it, but I was thinking, like, you just described James Harden and company.
Pretty good offense, man.
Yeah, they do pretty good. If you're going to do it that well. Hey, Coach, I remember, again, calling one of your games. I told you before we came on, and stop me if I'm giving away a secret, but you alluded to, we always talk about the disadvantages of not getting the same amount of time with your players that other schools do. I don't know if the disadvantage is part of what you do on a daily basis, but there's also, I remember there being a side to that, to where don't you guys have extra numbers as far as have been able to have full scout teams and guys that are there to literally service your starting unit that other universities don't have?
Yeah, so the great thing coming to the Naval Academy, if you're there, you're on, everybody's on scholarship. You know what I mean? If you're in the band or you come to sing in the choir, you know, just everybody's a, you come here, you got to be academically qualified. But everybody's at the Naval Academy, you're on full scholarship. And so we have more numbers than other people. And it definitely helps us from a scouting standpoint. You're able to have full scout teams. But obviously when those numbers increase, I mean, we don't have the same type of people that sure, other schools might sure. have. But having the numbers is definitely an advantage.
I just remember asking Coach, I said, Coach, how do you – like, obviously people have struggled. They have to prepare for you, and what you do is a little bit different on offense. But what about you and how you prepare for all these spreads and all these? He said, well, it's a struggle, but we've got a bunch of dudes. So it's, I don't have to take my starting quarterback and get him to go over here and run the spread. I've got plenty of guys that can scout team. I thought it was a unique take that I had no idea that was the case. That was pretty cool. Well, what about the – I got a chance to go to the Army-Navy game this year, man. It was a bucket list. And I think everybody that I've talked to here, these guys – Jeremy, he went with me, and we both went, and bucket list, man, item. How cool is it to be a part of that tradition, knowing that for the majority of people in our country, that's a bucket list event?
And like I said, just very humbled to be a part of that game, just knowing the people that are playing, just the pageantry of it, just all the things that happen. You know, I think of a lot of funny things over the course of the year. I remember back, you know, meeting President Obama, remember President Bush, when he was there, he was walking through our 7-on-7. You know what I mean? And, like, I mean, and you're kind of looking at him, but, you know, how do you tell the president, hey, watch how you can get run over? Like, you're just, you know, you're kind of, it was kind of a funny deal, but I know he's looking at the D.C., and we're kind of looking like, the president's in the middle of our schedule. Well, don't run a route, brother. Just stand still. But it, you know, there's not too many games like that where the president's on the field, the flyovers, just the different things. But I think it just symbolizes our country because everybody knows somebody that's been in the Army or the Navy or the Marine Corps throughout the country. And I think that's why there's so many people that it affects because it's America's game.
Ken Niumatalolo is joining us, won 11 games this season, finished ranked number 20 in the nation, one of 10 finalists for the Bear Bryant Awards. Coach, I wanted to ask you about the new rule put in place that now if you're playing football at Navy or Army and you want to go to the NFL, you can put your service time on hold a bit to play professionally. What do you think about that new rule, and how does that affect you in your recruiting and going out to get some players?
I think it's great. I think it's awesome to give people opportunities to do different things. Because, Jeremy, it's not going to change. It's not like we're going to be – you know, Alabama or something, we're going to have 20, you know, first-rounders coming out. It's still going to be the same. Every now and then we get guys that are good enough to play on that level. And if they're able to do that, I think it's awesome for them because they're still going to serve. You know, it's just their service time is delayed. I think it's a win-win for everybody because, like I said, we're still going to recruit the same type of kids that are coming. But every now and then we get some guys that can play at that level. And if they are, I think that's great. And for our country, I think it's still great because they're still serving.
Being joined by Ken Niumatalolo. Coach, I wanted to ask you about the playoff. I've been asking a lot of folks today about the college football playoff. There's been much debate, 4 teams, 8 teams, what it should it be? Should you split the difference and go with 6? Being in the American Conference, your point of view might be a little bit different than some of the other conferences that are out there. What's the perfect world? What's the right answer?
I mean, this is a discussion that a lot of us have, and I don't think anybody knows. We definitely want to be a part of it. I feel like our conference this year, having 4 teams, you know, in the top 25, just kind of shows you the caliber of our conference. You know, only the SEC and the Big Ten had more than we did. But we recognize kind of where we're at. You know, I heard somebody say this, and it's probably, I don't know if there's a perfect way, but having 8 where you got the 5 division winners, you know, the conference champion, they're represented in the three spots, maybe two at large, and the other spot being the group of five, you know, the top group of five. And I think that would serve well. I don't know if everybody's for that, but that's, of all the models that I've heard, I thought that was the closest one that sounds equitable, that it could be able to appease, you know, pretty much everybody.
I'm in on that deal, Coach. I'm in on that one right there, no doubt about it.
I'm surprised I hear him say that, because he's the only he's the only guy that's at this table that played at a Power Five school. Of course, I mean, Jeremy's a Houston Cougar. I'm a University of Memphis guy. Of course, you're Navy. I'm surprised he would say that. I think we've influenced him positively time, man.
Look, I'm all for it, man. If it's better for the player, I'm in. Coach, we're obviously at the 2020 Bear Bryant Awards. And we alluded to it a little earlier when you first sat down about being here, but I'm interested in, selfishly, I'm interested in, hey, Coach Franklin, we're trying to work here, man. We're trying to work, brother.
We got you up next, baby.
Hey, he's all-time greats, man. What's up, James?
Hey, what about, from Hawaii, played at Hawaii, obviously the head coach at Navy. How long have you been at Navy now?
Altogether, 22.
Yeah. Your offensive coordinator, I believe. How long has he been there?
He's been there 19 years with him.
What is coming up, man, from Hawaii playing ball to where you are now? What guys have influenced your career, coaches, players, have influenced your career the most?
It's a great question again, and it's the reason we're here. You think of somebody like Paul Bear Bryant that influenced so many players in the game. I think all of us will talk about our coaches, our dad, but also our coaches. For me, it's in coaching this game. My high school coach, John Velasco, he was a black belt Kenpo karate guy, and he always wore these shades that you couldn't see his eyes, and you're petrified of him. But he instilled discipline and doing things right and toughness. We always did things a certain way. We had our socks a certain way. We tucked in our shirts, and I didn't understand it back then. Why are we tucking our shirts? You know, just things are like, this doesn't have anything to do with winning the game. But it came back to your question, just with discipline, doing things the right way, and everybody's going one way. Dick Tomey, my coach in college, same thing. He's a person of toughness, discipline, playing hard. But he's the one coach, too, that showed that he genuinely cared for the players. And the things that I think about from him, just loving your players. Paul Johnson, who I learned this offense from, one of the great, all-time coaches that's ever coached this game. Those are the guys that have had a great impact on me. Bob Wagner also got me started in this profession. You learn from everybody. None of us have all the answers. You learn from your mentors, guys that have had a great influence on you. But all of those guys have been great. But probably my high school coach, just the discipline, the toughness, doing things the right way. As I reflect back on it, like I said, I thought at that time, like, it's crazy. I'm doing some of the same things now. Hey, get your socks there. Make your shirt in. Yes. Coach, why are we doing that?
Hey, Coach, there's one position in college football that I have the utmost respect for, and that's the quarterback at Navy, because the quarterback at Navy is not going to throw for 4,000 yards. He's going to be one of the toughest guys on the team because he's running the triple option. He's running midline veer. If there was one quality that you had to – put out there, it is absolutely necessary to be the starting quarterback at the Naval Academy. What would that quality be?
You just said it, toughness. I mean, just toughness. You know, just a lot of our games are close games. You know, I was looking at some. Our SID was telling us that close to 50% of our games have been one possession games. I mean, so you got to be a mentally tough guy, and you got to be a guy at the end of the game when you're going in there that everybody looks to you and he sees confidence. And if you're a guy that's mentally not tough, physically not tough, it's hard to lead people, but that's a great question. To be, I think in any offense, but especially in our offense, is mental toughness. I think about Tom Brady.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at that dude, man. I mean, just like his eyes look like he wants to kill you. I mean, he's a competitor.
Yeah.
You see him on the field. You see any great quarterback. I mean, they're all tough. They're tough dudes, man.
Ken Niumatalolo stopping by, a finalist for the Bear Bryant Award. Coach, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You got it. Coming up next, James Franklin, head coach of Penn State, joins us. It's the Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Hanging out with Clint Sterner and Wade Smith, I'm Jeremy Branham, broadcasting live from the Post Oak Hotel Uptown for the Bear Bryant Awards. 10 finalists, one of them will be given the award tonight, Ryan Day, Sonny Dykes, P.J. Fleck, Ken Niumatalolo, Mike Norvell, Ed Orgeron, Matt Rule, Dabo Sweeney, Kyle Whittingham, and we're being joined by the 10th finalist, last but not least, James Franklin from Penn State is joining us. Coach, thanks so much for coming on. What does it mean to be in the mix for this award with some of those names I just mentioned?
Well, the first thing that jumps out to me is you struggled with the coach from Utah's name, but you got the coach from Navy's name right. Yeah. That's pretty good right there. Yeah,
it was good until the end.
Yeah, you know, it's special. You know, to me, this is a really good example of a team award. This is a staff award, so the fact that, you know, you're part of this conversation is good, and we take a lot of pride, and I've been a finalist for this before. And it's special. You know, I was at Kansas State, got to know Coach Snyder very well as well. So, to be honored or to be a part of a day like today where Coach Snyder is being honored as well, and Coach Corso and all the rest of these great coaches, that, you know, we take a lot of appreciation.
Coach, you obviously at Penn State now, man, it's you've had a long journey to get to where you're at. You've coached in several different conferences. With a lot of different coaches. You're a guy that talks about your staff a lot. Talk to us a little bit about coaches throughout your career that have had an impact on the way you do things in 2020.
Yeah, so it's really everybody. You know, I played small school ball and had to work my way up the ladder and lived in 9 different states or countries in my first 9 years. And, you know, everybody from Mike Sherman with the Green Bay Packers to Ralph Regan, probably had the biggest impact on me at the University of Maryland. That was my first big break in the profession. I was there on and off for 8 years. Then at Kansas State as an offensive coordinator, Coach Snyder had just retired and still had his office and still had his secretary, so I'd spend some time with him as well. All the way back to my college coach, Denny Dowds at East Stroudsburg, who was the head coach there for 51 years. So, kind of a little bit of everybody, you know, and what I've tried to do in my career is steal things that I liked, that I thought I could add to my leadership style or the organization I was going to run sometimes. And just as valuable is not necessarily things that they did wrong, but things that I would do differently. You know, you can learn just as much from those things too. So I've been fortunate to work, you know, for some really good people and great places. And then I'm also one of the few guys that have had the perspective of being a head coach in the SEC as well as a head coach in the Big Ten. And I think that creates a lot of, value as well.
Coach Franklin, I was at the Cotton Bowl this year. I'm a University of Memphis graduate. And so I was at the game and I'm watching it and I'm in the stands and I'm looking. I'm like, who in the hell is number 11 for Penn State? Because he's making every single play. Talk to me a little bit about Michael Parsons and what he means to your program.
Yeah, special player. You know, there's no doubt about it. He was a big-time recruit out of high school. Actually, never played linebacker before. Was a defensive end and tailback in high school that we transitioned to the linebacker position. But he's got a very bright future. The thing that's crazy is he hasn't even scratched the surface. Again, because he's only been playing linebacker for 2 years, he's still in a lot of ways raw, if that makes sense. But, you know, I'm really proud of him. You know, he's killing it in school. He's been very successful now in his first 2 years on campus. I think, you know, the future is very, very bright for him. And, we're going to need him to.
Coach, you've did a heck of a job, obviously, at Vanderbilt, where it's a different job. I don't like saying it's tougher, but it's a different job.
You can say it's tough.
I said that to Stoops one day at Kentucky, right? We were doing a pregame deal, and I said to Mark Stoops at Kentucky, I said, Coach, because I played at Arkansas, so I understand the SEC from a little different perspective than maybe Marcus Spears and Booger and all those guys see it, and McElroy and those guys. And so I asked Coach, you know, hey, this is a little tougher job than some of the other guys, and it's like I offended him. Luckily, I know him well enough to where he didn't get too mad. He didn't dog cuss.
The difference is, though, he's still there, and he's trying to change the perception. So hey,
that's right. Yes, well, sir. Yeah, no, he didn't appreciate that question. But we went to dinner and had a good time. But you've done a heck of a job there, Coach, and you've done it. You're in the process of doing a great job at Penn State. One thing that's always, I think, I think is really cool is the way that you build things. You're a builder. There's great coaches out there, but there's also great builders. You appear to be one of the great builders of programs in the business. Is there anything in particular, values, principles, or anything like that, that that you have in stone that helps you build through a process?
Well, I think, first of all, you better know who you are. You better understand what your philosophy is. And then for us, core values, you know, the things that aren't going to change. It doesn't matter whether you're in the SEC or in the Big Ten. And as you know, offense, defense, special teams, you're going to tweak things every offseason. You're going to adjust. You're going to grow. You're always trying to improve. But I'm talking about the things that are at your core. And you know, I think those things have been very, very important for us. In terms of being able to turn a program around, build a program, however you want to describe it, and then be surrounded with a group of people as well. I've had a core group of guys that have been with me a long time. You know, one of the things I'm proud of is getting the Vanderbilt job and then going to Penn State. When Penn State sent the plane to get me, I said send two, and 16 people got on that plane. So I brought 16 people with me, coaches, strength staff, you know, recruiting staff, all those kind of things. And I think you don't always see that in this profession. Guys work hard, do a good job, get the next job, and leave guys behind. And I didn't do this by myself. You know, we did it together. So, you know, for me, it's, you know, when it comes to philosophy, my philosophy is it's ultimately about relationships. So every decision that we make and everything we do should be about building positive relationships in the building with the players and the coaches. Because I believe when the players know how much you care about them and the program, you got a chance to be really challenging and demanding on them.
Coach, there's a story I heard along those same lines, not about you, but about a different coach. I'm not going to mention he sent a jet back and only one guy got on that sucker when he changed jobs. How do you build a relationship with a staff to where you got 16 dudes getting on a couple of jets with you going to essentially uproot their families, move to a different location?
Yeah.
That's some serious trust, man. That's some serious love. How do you go about building that?
Well, I think it's like anything else, right? It's not about what you necessarily say in an interview. It's how you live every day. And, you know, one of the things I talk to people all the time about, I talk to young coaches. I just got done talking at the American Football Coaches Association about this as well. You know, you work hard, no different than you guys, so that you can have options. And within those options, be able to make the best decision for your family. And, you know, a lot of times people think that's about finances, and that plays a part in it. But, you know, I'm talking about, like, for us, my wife and kids, as well as the other wife and kids, they come to the office all the time. So my daughters are running around the office. They're downstairs in the nutrition bar making smoothies for the guys. They're hugging the guys in the training room as they're getting their ankle taped and stuff like that. So, you know, this is a tough profession for me to sit here and say I have balance in my life. I do not. But when I'm able to bring my wife and kids to the football facility and the rest of the coaches are doing it and you believe it. A lot of people say it. Oh, this is a family. But it doesn't necessarily feel that way.
Yeah.
Or your family's welcome in the facility, but then you don't create an environment where they feel welcome in the facility. So it's things like that. You know, do we have to make tough decisions sometimes? Yeah. But I think, you know, when you show people that you care about them and you care about their families and you care about their futures, I think over time, you know, that's where the trust comes from.
James Franklin is our guest, head coach of Penn State, has won 11 games in 3 of the last 4 years, top 10 team in 3 of the last 4 years. Coach, when you went to Penn State, you took over for now Houston Texans head coach Bill O'Brien when he took that job. What kind of things did you hear about Coach O'Brien whenever you were first getting started there at Penn State?
Well, not really here. You know, me and Billy, you know, go way back. We worked together at the University of Maryland. We lived in the same neighborhood. His wife and my wife were really good friends, so Billy was a big part of me taking the job because, as you guys probably know with Billy, he doesn't sugarcoat anything. I mean, you call Billy, he's not wasting time, and you can call him and get very direct information on where the program is, the strengths, the weaknesses, things that I need to be aware of, you know, why it makes sense for me and my family. So I probably talked to Billy probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 times. Before taking the Penn State job, you know, and obviously, you know, he did a really good job, showed up there, and you know, once he showed up there, you know, had some challenging situations to work through, and then he left, and I had to deal with the challenging situations. But I'm really proud. You think when I got there, we had 65 scholarships, we only had 6 scholarship offensive linemen. Weren't able to go to a bowl game, and then halfway through that season, we found out we were able to go to a bowl game. We've been to, you know, we've been to six straight bowl games, and you know, finished like you said, finished. You know, we've gone to three New Year's Six bowl games in the last 4 years. Have won a Big Ten championship, so we've done some pretty good things. But we just got to keep chipping away at it.
How many offensive linemen, coach?
Six.
Who was your quarterback?
Yeah.
Who was your quarterback?
Christian Hackenberg.
Golly, he's a little tougher than I thought. I need to give him a little more credit, a little more respect here.
Well, it's funny because you guys know ball. So when you say that to some people, they don't get it. Like, whatever. You know, that position, you should have between 17 and 20 scholarship offensive linemen. And on top of that, that's the position it takes the longest to develop. You know, so we were in a significant hole. When I got the job, and we were able to battle out of it.
You've had a lot of success, man. What's next for Penn State University?
I think the first thing you got to do is consistency, right? You got to be a part of that playoff and national championship conversation, and we've done that now. Really for the last 4 years. You know, so for us, I tell people all the time, you know, people think it's hard to get from outside the top 25 into the top 25, and from top 25 and the top 15, but I would say the gap between 15 and 25 is not as big as people think. But that gap between 7 and 3, you know, between those top four teams, there's a significant gap between the rest. So, you know, we got to keep scratching and clawing so we can get there. And it's not one area. It's just a little bit better in each area.
Coach, you're one of those coaches, man, that it seems like is in the conversation or on the fringe every time the College Football Playoff Committee meets. How do you deal with the fact that the committee gets behind closed doors and decides whether you're third or you're sixth or where you fit right there? Is that something you even think about, or is it just results are what they are and we roll forward?
Yeah, for the most part, I get it. You know, it's a tough job. You know, where I really, you know, feel strongly and have for a long time, I've been voicing this. I've heard some other people start, you know, talking about it now, but I've been saying this for a long time. I think the first thing that we need to do is we need to make the conferences consistent in how we go about our business. So what I mean by that is everybody needs to play the same amount of conference games. I don't care if it's 8, I don't care if it's 9, I don't care if it's 10. Just make it the same across the board. Everybody plays 1AA or FCS opponents, or you don't. Everybody plays a conference championship, or you don't. And then, like some schools, everybody must be in a conference. And then, to me, if you got a group of people sitting in a room trying to decide who the best four teams in college football are, at least if they can compare apples to apples, rather than how you're supposed to compare eight conference games from the SEC and playing 1AA opponents compared to the Big Ten with 9 conference games, no 1AA opponents, or the Big 12 who plays 9 conference games round robin, correct? Is that correct?
Yeah.
And no championship game. How are you supposed to ask some people to get in the room and decide what's the same when everybody's doing it differently? So I think that's the first thing that needs to happen.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Coach, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't ask about the hazing allegations that came out in the latest news cycle. Can you comment on that?
No, sir.
Okay. James Franklin, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
It's head coach for the Penn State Nittany Lions, James Franklin, stopping by, one of the finalists for the Bear Bryant Awards. Coming up next, Texans defense is going to need some help in 2020. Who is available that will help immediately? We'll tell you next. This is Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham from inside the Post Oak Hotel uptown for the Bear Bryant Awards. You look at the Texans. They come off the loss, obviously, against the Kansas City Chiefs. And it's very easy to notice that the number one priority is, one, finding a defense, and more importantly, a proven pass rusher that can get to the quarterback and take a little bit of pressure off of that secondary. Here are some names that are out there that are going to be free agents that come to mind that could be of interest for the Houston Texans. Robert Quinn, Kyle Van Noy, Eric Armstead, Yannick Ngakoue, Shaq Barrett, who had the huge year in Tampa Bay, broke Warren Sapp's record for the most sacks in franchise history. Jadeveon Clowney, that's a name that maybe we can scratch off. And then Chris Jones, another name. There's 7 names right there that are free agents this offseason. Pass rushers, a position in need for the Houston Texans. Which one kind of tickles your fancy with the names I just mentioned?
When I look at it, I think Robert Quinn is a guy. He was number 46 on a top 50 list for what that's worth. I don't even remember exactly what the list was, something to do with ESPN. But when you talk about a guy that, one, I think they'll be able to afford, had a big-time year, I believe it was 2015, Couple of down years. He got in some trouble off the field, and I got a couple of suspensions. But he made a return. And if you watched the Cowboys at all this year, when he was on the field, the dude is a step ahead. He's got some serious twitch. He's got the ability to put his hand in the dirt and go get the quarterback. And when he doesn't get the quarterback, at the very least, pressure him, collapse the pocket. And so when I look at all of those guys, I think Robert Quinn is one that'll be affordable. And I think he'll be a guy that could be a very good fit in Houston. Now, I did mention the off-the-field stuff. You know, I don't know that that's going to fit with Bill O'Brien, assuming that he's still in the head coach of the Houston Texans. But we've talked about it a million times, Wade. When it's all said and done, I've heard enough of the culture stuff. You know, I mean, culture is important. I know it is. Look, I'm as a former player and being around organizations and programs in the media as much as I have, I understand and respect and admire great cultures. But at some point in time, you've got to have a guy that can put his hand in the dirt and go eat. And I think Robert Quinn is a guy that, if there is an exception made, he's a possibility that's going to be out there.
Yeah, I like Robert Quinn as a player. He's been good for a long time. Back when I was playing in the league, he was getting it done from the defensive end position, giving left tackles and right tackles problems throughout the league. He's getting a little bit up there in age. And so if there was somebody that based off of the list of names that was given by JB, a guy that I really like on that list is Eric Armstead. Now, Eric Armstead is a guy that I think fits right in to what the Texans do on defense right now. He's flexible to where he could be an inside-outside guy as far as rushing a passer, a big, strong guy that can hold up in the run game if need be as well. And so, and he's a younger guy. And so I think Eric Armstead would fit this defense perfectly. I don't – some of these other guys that are edge guys, I don't know if they would hold up in this defense, because you got to be able to set the edge in this type of skill, in this scheme. You know, Romeo Crennel, we don't know if he's going to be the coordinator or not going forward, but I'm pretty sure based off of the fact that Whitney Mercilus was given a long-term deal, that they're going to keep the same type of defensive scheme. And so you got to get somebody that fits into it. I like Eric Armstead a bunch.
What do you think about Yannick Ngakoue from a standpoint of again, I think he's going to – his price tag is not what it once was. I think a couple of years ago, he was – the expectations were through the roof. The stats were pretty good the last couple of years. He's fell off, and I can't remember the report I read whether he's fell off a little bit relative to playing the run or if it's the pass. I can't remember exactly what that is or what that was, but he's 25 years old. He's a player that you would think that Bill O'Brien, being in the same division with the Texans, that Bill O'Brien and his staff would have a pretty good idea of whether he's a good fit. He was number 18 overall on this top 50 2020 free agent list that I saw. He's another one to me, Wade. 25 years old, that's a dude, if you can find a way, he's obviously talented, if you can find a way to spark what he once had and keep that cat rolling, that could be a big-time get now.
Yeah, man, he's a very twitchy player. He plays with a very high, great ball get off when he comes to rushing the passer. He's an accomplished pass rusher. But then you have to think to yourself, if you're going to compare Yannick Ngakoue to somebody that you have on the roster already, Jacob Martin, if you're going to have a guy like Jacob Martin on your roster that's going to cost you so much, you know, you're going to get a lot more value out of a Jacob Martin as opposed to spending a bunch of money to bring in a guy like Yannick Ngakoue, and then looking at kind of some of the things that Yannick has had issues with past teams and organizations. Remember, Bill O'Brien's best friend in coaching is out there in Jacksonville, Doug Marrone, and so I'm sure he's going to have information on Yannick. So I really like Yannick as a player, but he's too similar in skill set to Jacob Martin for me to kind of say, you know, let me reconcile paying this guy a bunch of money to come in here and rush the passer. Even though he's much more accomplished and he's better at it, I just don't see if it would make sense value-wise when you have Jacob Martin here.
Wade, you said – I thought you were fixing to say he's a high-motor guy.
I caught myself.
There's not but one high-motor guy on my whole list right here. That'd be Kyle Van Noy, brother.
Well, Clowney's the best player on this list, but I think that ship has sailed. I think we can all agree on that. They might be priced into Yannick Ngakoue. I mean, that's the reality of the situation, right? Because the Texans, yes, they have some cap room right now, but you start to crunch the numbers, they bring back some of those guys, it's going to be tough for them to go into the free agency market and bring in some big names. They might have to be, you know, looking for those bargains.
JB, I don't think they have a choice. I know yesterday Wade actually alluded to, if you're going to move anybody, maybe move J.J. Watt. And I don't remember the context of our conversation, but that
you was trying to trade Zach Cunningham, right? That's what it was. And I was like, no, you
know,
don't get into the habit.
You know, I wasn't trying to trade no damn Zach
it was
Cunningham.
Actually, that was Sean Pendergast, but you didn't want to put him out there on air. He texted us afterwards as we finished the segment, like, you could have put it out there that I was the one that had that idea. So,
right.
But yeah, Zach Cunningham, that's how it came up.
But you know, and I don't know that I disagree with you, Wade. I don't know that it'll ever happen with this regime, but the point being is that I think it's desperate times call for desperate measures. I mean, if they do keep things as is at the top of the organization, then you've got to make some changes. You can't run it back. I mean, look, we talked about the Rockets. You can't run it back. What'd they do? They went out, moved Chris Paul, brought in Westbrook. I thought that was – whether it's going to work or not is irrelevant, but you couldn't be a run it back and expect different results. And so I think the Texans are at that point where – The running it back is not an option, and I think that they have to make some moves. And so when I slept on the fact that you said move 99, I don't like to hear it. Houston doesn't like to hear it, but it would open up some space, and it would be there's enough appeal there that you could get a lot in return.
Well, let's be clear now. That wasn't my plan to move 99. but my
response. Okay, you can have a conversation about it.
Yeah, but my response to if I was going to trade anybody, I would trade 99 before I traded Zach Cunningham, and that's how that came to fruition. I feel like they have enough money under the cap that they should be able to keep the majority of those guys. I think you should be able to franchise a guy like DJ Reader and keep a guy like Zach Cunningham and extend him and pay him, and then see what happens with JJ if he gives you a more user-friendly deal, I guess you want to say, a team-friendly deal because he wants to stay here. But the Texans have so much money under the salary cap, and the cap continues to grow each and every year. There's guys on this team that are going to be coming up soon that I feel like they can take care of. And so I would much rather keep those pieces and try to add to them as opposed to having to deal them away.
Well, that's common sense, right? You'd rather keep those good pieces. Do you really feel like they can – go get the players, the caliber players they need, particularly up front defensively, to improve that are difference makers without losing a marquee name or a young talent that's really good? Do you really think they'll be able to do that?
It's going to be very difficult to do it. I think a lot of it depends on what happens with Bradley Roby. I mean, if you can improve your pass rush, then you can let a guy like Bradley Roby go.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you can if you got guys that can get after the quarterback, because there is a certain amount of money that you can spend, you're not going to be able to fully pay Bradley Roby and Zach Cunningham and DJ Reader. And then you still have to make improvements on offense as well. You don't know what's going to happen at the receiver position because Will Fuller's coming up. You don't know what you're going to do with Kenny Stills. Those guys only have a couple years left on the deal. So there's a lot going on there. But I'd have to say, man, if you have the opportunity to keep a guy in the fold long-term like a Zach Cunningham and add a guy like Eric Armstead to this defense, it pays huge dividends, and then Eric Armstead could transition to be your J.J. Watt of the defense going forward.
Well, when it's all said and done, there's a list out there that there's going to be plenty of guys available, right? I mean, to bring in, however you want to do it, there's going to be some guys out there that would be pretty sexy options relative to filling some needs for the Texans.
I think the J.J. Watt discussion, I don't think it'll ever happen. Now, it would clear a lot of cap space, would clear a lot of room to go out and get some free agents. I'm not sure the trade value he has, though, because you're looking at a guy who's in his 30s, he's injury-prone, he's got a big contract, he might want a new contract going forward. I'm not sure the trade value would be that high on J.J. Watt. Now, it would give you the flexibility under the cap to go out and sign multiple free agents because this defense has a lot of holes. The idea of losing Bradley Roby is terrifying. We all saw what happened against Kansas City and Pat Mahomes going off on the secondary. I understand they couldn't get to the quarterback. They were playing a volatile defense, going man-to-man, hoping they would get enough turnovers or score enough to shoot out against Kansas City. But this secondary is a secondary that's not very good. Yes, the pass rush would help that, but there are a lot of holes on this defense. And, yeah, you might be able to go out and sign one, maybe two guys, but they're going to have to look for creative ways if they want to have a drastic turnover for this D.
Right, I will tell you this, JB. From watching that game, there wasn't a lot of times when the Kansas City Chiefs receivers or Travis Kelce were running down the field wide open. They had guys in their hip pocket. Pat Mahomes was just making excellent passes. Those guys were making good catches in traffic. And so the DBs were not overmatched from that perspective to where there's just guys running free all over the place. The problem was that there was no pressure on Pat Mahomes to make that pass be a little bit off so you can get the pass breakup or you can get an interception. And so to me, the number one thing is to figure out a way to get somebody to rush the passer. And so I'm sure that's why this conversation came to be anyway, because you got to get somebody in here that can help get pressure on the quarterback, and that it hurt them tremendously against the Kansas City Chiefs.
And there's no chance you can do that with the draft, you think? The earliest pick that they have is a second rounder. I mean, any pass rusher in his rookie year is probably going to go in the first 15 picks, not the second round.
You know, I mean, obviously you don't get a top 15 guy. I mean, that's obvious. But I don't think it's a stretch to think that you could go out there and get a second round guy that can come in with the pieces that are already there and be a true impact player on the front line. Now, whether that's an interior an interior defensive lineman slash edge guy, or is it an outside linebacker, hybrid outside linebacker? I mean, I don't think that that's a stretch. I think college football today for the most part, they're throwing the football around the park. And so you pass rushers, defensive ends, outside linebackers are improving. The numbers are going up based off of the schemes that is college football right now. So I don't think it's a stretch. Now, you got to do your due diligence, and you got to hit the nail on the head. You know, you can't go out there and you can't miss. You can't swing and miss. But I don't think that it's a stretch to think that a second or third rounder in that defensive front could come in and help tremendously. I mean, look, you look at Justin Reed. Justin Reed came in, and he helped tremendously with this defense. I mean, he's going to be a 10-year guy that's with the Houston Texans and probably a Pro Bowler before it's all said and done. And he was a third rounder. So I don't think it's a stretch at all.
Texans have picks. They don't have premium picks, but they do have picks in the upcoming draft. Clint Smitty, JB from the Bear Bryant Awards at the Post Oak Hotel Uptown. There were some cool two moments over the weekend that were really cool as we're getting closer to the Centennial Hall of Fame class for the NFL. Some more names got put on that list today, but there was two cool moments this past week on the countdown shows and the postgame shows. First, Bill Cowher was seen on – they told him he was going to be a Hall of Fame member. They did it on TV. He got teary-eyed, a real emotional moment. And then Fox did it as well with Jimmy Johnson getting into the Hall of Fame. Here was Jimmy Johnson after that surprise announcement.
Thank you, Coach, for all you've done for the game. Thank you for all you're going to do for the game. Thank you for the history that you've made and the lives that you've impacted. Thank you. It's my great honor to tell you that you're going to be the 328th Hall of Famer into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And your legacy is going to be in Canton, Ohio forever. Congratulations, Coach. Congratulations.
Hey, bud. Oh, my God. That is awesome.
I think Paul Hutton and Green. Jimmy, overcome the emotion right now. But tell us what you're doing.
Yeah.
The only thing I can think of is all the assistant coaches that have worked for me, all the great players that have played for me, they're the reason I'm here. And they're the reason I can't talk.
All right.
No.
Where's your Bob?
I mean, this is so special to me because when you put in the work that we put in, it's nice to know people appreciate it.
Absolutely. We love you, JJ.
Love you,
him and that brother. Love you. Congratulations. Jimmy Johnson, the latest member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Pretty cool moment. Jimmy Johnson, they had the shot of Troy Aikman there, too. He was kind of tearing up in the booth.
JB.
That was cool.
Yeah. You talk about a guy in our day and age of covering games and watching games and being a fan and being a player. What he was able to do at Miami, obviously, and with the Cowboys, obviously. We were – I don't know how old you guys were. Y'all were younger than me, but that was in our junior high school days. And I mean, there was nobody better in the business at the pro level or the college level at that point in time. And now, obviously, we all know him on TV, but getting that announcement live on TV and getting the raw emotion out of somebody is super cool, man.
Yeah, man, you guys all know that growing up, I grew up in Dallas, Texas. I absolutely hated the Cowboys as a kid, and so this guy was part of the reason why I hated them so much, because they had so much success. But all the while that I couldn't stand the Cowboys, I had a lot of respect for what he did and what he was able to do with that organization. And to see this video and listen to that audio, man, I don't care what your affiliation is, you had to have a lot of respect. And and have a good feeling about seeing that and witnessing how much it meant to him to be a Hall of Famer and to get that recognition, man. And so I got a lot of respect for him. A lot of those players that was on that team, he's got a bunch of Hall of Famers. And, you know, I listened to John McClain yesterday, and he was saying that Jimmy Johnson never thought he was going to make it to the Hall of Fame. He didn't think that he coached long enough to make it. And John McClain told him, like, no, you're going to make it. And you could tell by his reaction that he truly didn't believe that he was going to ever make it to that mountaintop. And so to see that was an awesome deal. I thought it was a great idea for them to do that, to where it was on TV with him, and the same thing with Bill Cowher. Both of those were awesome moments that we were able to share with them. And so you got to love it.
And Jimmy Johnson from the Golden Triangle down in Port Arthur. So it was a cool moment for Jimmy Johnson. Mark Berman tweeted this out a moment ago. The Houston Astros, of course, are looking for a new manager. They're looking for a new general manager. According to Mark Berman, his MLB sources, that they plan to get this done by February 1st. They've worked hard to narrow a list. And there are seven names mentioned for the manager job. Joe Espada, the bench coach for the Houston Astros under A.J. Hinch, was not with the club in 2017. He came in 2018. Jeff Banister, that's my pick. Dusty Baker, Buck Showalter, another pretty big name. Bruce Bochy, Will Venable, Cubs third base coach, and Raul Ibanez. So you can tell that Jim Crane getting to work quickly. Seven names that could potentially be the new Astros manager, I should say, in the next couple of weeks.
JB, this is one of those jobs that I would imagine guys are lining up to get. I mean, we talked about the fact that the roster hasn't been touched. There's no discipline handed down. There's no penalties. So they're locked and loaded for another 90 to 95 win season. I would think that any manager, especially one at the end of his career or one early in his career, that want an opportunity to either wrap a nice career up or kick one off, I would think this would be a hell of a spot for a guy like that.
And Banister is the guy. Banister should be the guy the Astros hire in the search right now. Just hire Jeff Banister. He's a Houston guy, grew up in the Houston area, went to the University of Houston, was the manager for the Texas Rangers, was
went
the
to
two,
U of H.
Hold on, 2015 AL Manager of the Year. So he's somebody who already has the resume. He's a good baseball man, cancer survivor. Jeff Banister should be the manager of the Houston Astros. He was the runner-up when A.J. Hinch was named the manager for the Astros, and they went to Texas.
Hey, Mr. Crane, hell, you just heard it. You just heard my man JB just in the search, and Banister's the man.
And Banister is a listener of Sports Radio 610, so you got to show him some love just off of that alone.
You mentioned his name a couple days ago.
Oh, of course I did, because like JB said, he was the manager at the Texans Rangers, and so he did a great job there. And like I said, he's a Houston guy. He kind of got a raw deal when he ended up having to leave the Rangers, and so he's a guy that is Houston through and through, and I think he would do a good job. I also like the name that was given yesterday by Tony Gwynn Jr. of Dusty Baker. I think either one of those guys, you would get a good job out of both of them, and it would work out well for the Houston Astros.
Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham coming up next. Sonny Dykes is be joining us as you listen to the Bear Bryant Awards. This is Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.